Hello, my friends. Today, I want to give a special shout out to Rex at Logrhythm, Ben at BIM Object, and Darren at Animal Logic. If you don't know, Animal Logic is the company behind all the animation of the Lego movies. All of these companies are dedicated to creating better leaders, so a special thank you to all of you. Now, if you want your team stacked with humble, outcome-driven, technically capable people, then you'll want to set up a CLEAR review. CLEAR stands for Complementary Leadership Evaluation and Review, and we created it for teams and technology leaders just like you. So here's what you'll leave the CLEAR review with. A clear step-by-step plan tailored to your exact situation. Tactical insights on how you can apply these skills immediately. And a review of your leader's abilities so you can see how your team stacks up to 500 other teams that are just like yours. And we'll answer all of your questions about how to create better leaders faster. Remember, great leaders grow companies. Visit leaderbits.io/clear to set up your CLEAR review today. Now, get excited because today we are talking to Jeremy King, the CTO at Walmart. And we discuss building trust with your stakeholders by being open and transparent. Their approach to hiring over 4,000 technologists in just under 2 years. And what metrics Jeremy finds most useful to keep track of. All of this right here, right now on the Modern CTO Podcast.
Here we go. This is the Modern CTO Podcast.
Oh, so where are you calling in from today?
I'm from California today. I'm on the road quite a bit, but this week I've got a few days in California and a few days on the road.
How much time do you spend traveling?
I'm on the road quite a bit, actually. About half of our team is in Arkansas, and I've got about 2,000 out here in California, and then there's another 1,000 in Bangalore. So it's I'm all over the place.
That's exciting. You get to go around, see all the different teams in the different areas.
Yeah, it's good. We just opened a new building down in Carlsbad, California. And that office is great. The team is wonderful, but it's like 5 minutes from the beach. It's just, you wonder why the entire Silicon Valley doesn't live down there,
It's right? I'm lucky enough. I live in a beach vacation town in Florida.
No, great.
Yeah, so everybody's always so excited about the beach, but I'm a native here. So just driving to the store, you see the beach.
Right.
Yeah. So is there a lot of good mountain biking out in California?
There's a lot of really good mountain biking out here. Yes. Yeah. It's a little wet. I didn't go this weekend because it's been really wet and the trails get pretty trashed when you go out on them. But yeah, this time of year we get about a month of rain and then it'll be dry and beautiful the rest of the year.
Now, is it clay or dirt?
It's dirt. It's the Santa Cruz Mountains is where the bulk of people go, sort of all the way down from San Francisco, down, south of Gilroy. There's just beautiful mountain trails. And so they're up in the hills and you get the redwoods and you get once you get up on top of the mountain, you can see the ocean on one side and Silicon Valley on the other. It's surreal up there. It's a beautiful place.
Now, I haven't ever been to the West Coast for mountain biking, but I mountain bike a lot on the East Coast. But I have been to the West Coast in the Vegas area for hiking, Red Rock or something hiked.
Yeah, Red Rock and all that out there.
Oh, that was amazing.
There's some incredible pieces out there. I've never been to Red Rocks, but I've heard the same thing with like Joshua Tree and all those places. Just incredible, right? It's something on my list. I've gone to Grand Canyon all through the South, but not to those places. I'd love to try them.
So I saw that you were a part of the CTO forum.
Yes. Yeah. You know, so Bashir and the team there?
I have not, but what I'm noticing is from the popularity from the podcast is I'm started going to these events and conferences. And I found out that there's all these forums of these great technology leaders that collect together in their cities. And I saw that you were on one of them and I was like, oh, that's so cool.
Yeah. I actually love the CTO forum for a bunch of reasons. Mostly it's funny. We laugh when we're there that CTOs don't have a lot of cohorts inside the company, if you will, where the sales and marketing guys often will, get together and the CEO is usually an ex sales guy or something. But the CTO is sort of typically around the executive table, you know, are usually the only technologist there. And so these kind of forums, we talk about, we can go and cry on each other's shoulders about our the woes of being a CTO, but also that it's great because you see, in this conference in particular, because largely it's Silicon Valley based, you get the Google, the Facebooks, the YouTubes, the Netflix and LinkedIn. And then you've got sort of the people who are sort of in the middle of the pack, you know, take the sort of the Walmarts of the world. And then you've got the people that are really on, you know, a technology transformation, sort of all three of them together, all talking about challenges of digital transformations and, you know, sort of seeing what the industry is doing. It's wonderful. And oftentimes these companies, like, I really do not like trade shows. I had to go work trade shows when I was in enterprise software for a while, and that'll turn you off in your own right. But also, you know, how many vendor pitches do you want to hear in one day? You know, and these forums, it's more about idea sharing than it is about pitches, if you know what I mean. Like here's oh, yeah. where, you know, and you can compare and contrast, you know, different vendors from each other without, you know, and you get the real download, if you know what I mean.
Oh yeah. So I had a transition, right? So from developer into the CTO space. And one of the big things I realized in that transition is at first I looked at the whole networking social thing as, oh no, you just got to be writing code all the time. You have to always be improving your craft and 100% focus on this 24/7. And then I realized that you can't get far without relationships. Like, it's always about the people. And so when I see forum groups like this that collect together, I always like to talk about the importance of, you know, networking and relationships. So if there is, well, right now I guarantee that there's some individual, right, going from that developer to CTO position or just developer to team lead. And can you talk to them about the benefits and your career importance of networking and relationships?
It is an excellent point. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, the engineer CTO is kind of, you know, sort of background is oftentimes they're sort of introverted engineer type, and they don't understand the value of that type of relationship. And I totally agree. I can't tell you the number of times I've picked up the phone. As a matter of fact, just last week I'm doing some work on edge computing, and I picked up the phone and I called a buddy of mine and said, hey, who knows, like, sort of the intricacies of, you know, data center space and how much profit is being made in these sort of data centers and that sort of thing. And I'm like, oh, we have this one guy, you know, here, pick up the phone and call him, and, you know, and you get, you know, a question that, you know, might have cost, you know, you a fortune to go out and get a consultant or whatever, and you just build these networks yourselves. So those kind of forums really introduce that. But I back to my point, I think everybody goes through their own digital transformation journeys in their own way, in their own speed. In some cases, even companies that are, you know, not very tech savvy, you know, may have, you know, found some, you know, technology that's really helping them transform faster. And then, of course, you want to know, you know, what's going on when, you know, people are negotiating contracts. So it's a wonderful place to do that, not to mention the camaraderie of the whole thing.
I love it. I love getting together with the people. Oh, it's amazing.
Yeah.
Now, so I would say it's understated to what you would imagine it would be. You go out there, you get connected with a good group of people, and then you have essentially like work friend, like professional friends, some become friends, but it's just unbelievable the amount of change and opportunity that can come once you have the network. Now, speaking of people, do you happen to know Yazir Anwar?
Is he from Verizon? Is that right?
So you have overlap at Walmart Labs.
Oh, you're talking about Yasser. Yeah. Okay. Sorry. Yeah. You're talking about Macy's, right? And William Sonoma.
Yeah. Yeah. So he was Macy's, and he went William Sonoma.
Absolutely. Yes. I know him very well. Yeah. He and I just congratulated him in his new job, right? Over there. I think he's only been there a little while, but yeah, he worked on the Walmart Labs team early on and did some work on the platform side. So yeah, he worked for a good friend of mine, but I knew him very well.
I'm interested in Walmart Labs because a number of really great leaders have come out of there. So yeah, we do extensive research on all of our guests and get to know everybody, and we keep notes. And so that, for example, when you were coming on the show, your experience as Walmart Labs, our team identified the overlap and experience. And then we said, hey, we got to ask him if he knows, you know, Yazir. So I'm curious,
What do you think Walmart Labs is doing that's producing a lot of these great leaders?
You know, I think it's a good question, and I think what most people don't recognize is the amount you can learn about scaling in particular. I mean, I talk about this all the time with vendors, is I get these solutions that, you know, are good for, you know, either very small companies or companies that have a small footprint physically. And then you look at Walmart, and we're talking about, you know, every system we have is generating petabytes worth of data. You know, every system that we integrate with the store, you have to, you know, not only look at, you know, all 5,000 stores in the US, but 10,000 stores internationally. So you're looking at pretty much everything we look at has a scaling component to it. And as a result, we teach people scale. And I was like that at eBay as well. And, you know, people look at, companies who have gone through the scaling pain problems before and use that. You know, Yasser and there's a number of other leaders that were local here. And I think, you know, we also did a pretty interesting job on sort of the digital transformation side. Even the name Walmart Labs was trying to convey the fact that not only are we a research part of the arm of the company, but we are delivering solutions for our customers in a new way that, you know, that Walmart hadn't, you know, really thought of before. It's not fair to say that, but technology has always been a part of Walmart, but we don't usually get credit for that externally, right? So, you know, we had to do a fair amount of branding and just to get people to understand that I'm hiring for, you know, the latest data scientists, the latest, you know, architecture, cloud architecture folks, the, you know, everything that we touch, you know, has a scaling factor to it that people are compelled to. So I think just spending a lot of time in the media also gives us attention from some companies.
So speaking of scaling, I read online that you're planning on hiring 2,000 technologists last year, right?
Yeah, this year.
And so this year.
Yeah.
So I'm curious to know. So we have CTOs of all levels. So for the higher level CTOs, right? For the ones that are more enterprise area like you are at, what did your involvement actually look like tactically to deploy that? Did you work with HR team? Like how did that process go for you?
Yeah, we spent a lot of time last year sort of figuring out how to scale the organization. That as we've gone through the digital transformation part of the company, what we're really seeing now is as we've lessened our reliance on some legacy technologies, we've been able to move much faster as an organization. And so when you look at investments across the board in the company, you know, we have, you know, we can invest in building new stores and remodeling stores into, you know, store labor rates, all the things that a company goes through when they're doing an investment profile. And what they've really seen over the last couple of years is that, you know, a dollar put in Walmart Labs and investing in technology has returned, money back to the company faster. So we tried this last year to accelerate our hiring and did very well. We hired about 1,700 people last year. And the people that we brought on board made huge leaps very quickly in places like forecasting and replenishment and our supply chain business. And we launched a new redesigned version of our website and a number of in-store apps. And the company is starting to see the output of that engineering effort, turn into really fruitful benefits for the company. And so we talked about again this year, like what other things we have. You know, there's every corporation has a never-ending list of things that they want to go build, and it really the question was how many more people could we actually go get. So we're gonna try and get another 2,000 this year, and we're well underway to do that. But it is as you said, you know, I don't believe in sort of the hiring practice where you just bring on a cohort of 100 people and then they go figure out which, you know, part of the company they want to go work in. You know, we work fairly traditionally, but say, hey, we want people who are passionate about supply chain or passionate about merchandising or passionate about data science or passionate about the consumer front end or mobile apps. And we really focus our recruiting effort on those pieces so that when you get into the organization, you really love what you do. And you can really make a big difference. So you always meet the hiring manager. You always understand what the goals and objectives of the organization are, and you can make a lot of progress on hiring. So we're in interview craze right now. We're doing you know, some interview days and things like that. But I think, you know, often companies can be successful at as well to bring on several people, but it's going to be a long ride. I mean, obviously there's a lot of people out there, but the more and more people hear about what we're doing at Walmart, the easier it is to get people through the front door, if you know what I mean.
So what are you most excited about? What's something that would attract people listening to this podcast? Some technology that you're working on, or?
It's across the board. I'm responsible for really four or five main areas. So as I outlined, we really have been focused a ton on the front end. So online grocery has been the biggest growth area of Walmart in the last couple of years. So we've doubled the size of that team, and it's really developing the app, but also the consumer experience across the board. So we've built, sometimes I say we built our own ride-sharing application because we're seeing not only customers coming to the store, but we're also working with third parties to build a delivery service as well. So that we have last mile delivery services in many areas. We've built notifications for pickup. So when you're headed to the store, you check in and we can follow you as you arrive. And that way you're literally sitting in the parking lot for, 30 seconds as we come out and put your groceries into the car. And, those kind of experiences are not always, customer facing from the UI perspective, but they're super compelling on the back end perspective. So we're building all those pieces. We're building a new front end apps for grocery, and that includes things like personalization. And the fun part about this job is you're intermingling your store shopping experience with your online experience. So if you've been to Walmart in the last, 6 months, I know what you buy on Wednesdays. I know what you buy on Fridays. I know what you pick up on the weekends. And I can make those recommendation engines for you online based on what I think you're going to run out of and that sort of thing. So how do I take that offline data and marry it with the online experience so that when you're coming to shop for sometimes 50 or 100 items, how do I make that shopping experience super easy? And that's, the personalization recommendation engine and just the overall UI of the experience. What do we got this week? When it's Thanksgiving, you're ordering pumpkins and turkeys, and when it's Christmas, you got your hot chocolates and your candies and stuff, right? So we can make those kind of experiences much, much easier.
I've got something for you.
Yeah, bring it.
Okay, so we geek out, we build products, right? That's you have a programming background as well, right? That's like So I had in this office, I think it was like a couple of weeks ago on a Friday afternoon, we were just making stuff up, right? Just a fun brainstorming session of products and ideas. And this grocery thing actually came up. And so the idea was that it would know everything that I buy frequently, right? That I like to eat. And then it would also know, it would put me into some persona or some category with people who have similar tastes as I do. And then when I want to try something new in a new category, like let's say I want to try a new pasta or something, it would tell me based off of that little persona, that little network I'm in, which pasta I would like the most.
I see. So like a group, would people know each other, or you're just saying you would be part of the cohort?
Yeah. The data. You just pay attention to what products I'm buying, what food I'm eating. And then you can either suggest new foods based on what other people who have my similar taste patterns like.
Absolutely.
Right. Or if I want to try something in a new category, you could tell me which, like if I'm going to try like 10 different types of pastas, but it knows all the other food I eat and all the other things I like. And it knows that all these, you get it, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The sort of cohort analysis on that and sort of people who like this also like this, is something we've been doing for a while. I think I agree with you. And I think the interesting thing is a lot of this becomes more hyper local. you know, right now, you know, it's raining and 50 degrees in California. My son's in Indiana at Purdue, and it was minus 30 there, right? You know, so, you know, people are buying, as a matter of fact, I think we saw some trends on soups going up in the sort of cold fronts as they were going on. We're selling more soup across the country than we normally do, right? And that sort of hyper-local can also be a really interesting aspect as well, what people's tastes are, but also weather-related events and who knows what else, you know, what's fresh and that sort of thing. We run into this a ton. Walmart is the biggest supplier of organics and fresh and frozen produce and meats in the world. And we need local growers and what's locally available, you know, we just can't get enough of it. Organics in particular, how do we get more? So how do you make, you know, a recommendation? Hey, we've got some really great local fresh kale or whatever that's grown locally. How do you get that out to the consumer? Do you know we've got it available? So that's where the scale turns really interesting as well, where you're not talking about just packaged goods. You're talking about how do I get this in a fresh experience that people will love.
No, that's like, that excites me as the future. I want to, you know, fresh peaches down at the store.
Yeah.
And then I could just one tap last mile delivery, boom, now it's just at my house.
Yeah, absolutely. We talk about this a lot. 2 years ago, we celebrated some local growers, and I think the woman was a watermelon grower. And she has, she's a big supplier to Walmart now, but when she was first getting started, she just had the one field and one truck and, you know, was, you know, driving to the Walmart to drop off her local goods. But how do you make sure that information is getting out? And that ties all the way back into the supply chain. So I've talked a lot about the customer experience stuff, but the supply chain and merchandising parts of this job are almost the place where it's even more compelling. And I've talked a lot about where data science and machine learning are gonna make the biggest transition. Everybody loves talking about the personalization engines and sort of recommendation engines on the front end, but it's really about things like I was describing, like how do you price this stuff? How do I make sure I can get enough of it? You know, getting my replenishment, you know, more predictable, if you will, so I can smooth out my supply chain and make sure I'm having the freshest, best stuff in the stores at all times. And I think that will make the biggest change for retailers. Machine learning will have the biggest impact on merchandising and supply chain for retailers than any other area. So, and I think as it's part of Walmart's core values anyway, our whole drive for technology is to not only build great customer experiences, but to drive costs out of the whole system. The goal is to effectively continue to lower the cost for consumers so that we can continue to drive Walmart as a low price leader. So anything I can do on the technology side to drive costs out, you know, is just part of the Walmart strategy overall.
In my mind, when you were describing that, I was imagining like drones flying over, like, you know, grandma's crops, predicting yields based off of like image recognition.
I have seen a lot of those. I know a lot of farmers these days are doing that type of work. And I agree. The ability to predict freshness is something that we look at a lot. And, you know, typically that's, you know, farmers for generations are going to know, hey, this thing's going to be pickable and, you know, and, But your point is right about how do you micro water things and so that the entire field is ripening at the same rate, and these sorts of things are pretty compelling. And I think as we talk about things like food waste and how much waste happens in the supply chain overall, the better we can do that, the better we can feed America and keep our prices down, right? And that's the key, because so much is just wasted in the supply chain as they're getting out of the field. So some really good work going on there.
Have you seen any of the startups that are doing the fully autonomous organic growth of, I think they got like, they can do lettuce and some other basic things down?
Yeah, we just had, we have a kickoff meeting every year that we call YBM, Year Beginning Meeting. This year I was just down in Houston, and there was this sort of organic farmers that are growing up, you know, they have these, they're almost chain. They almost look like these big chains, and they're growing, you know, lettuce in this case, upwards. And I think that's going to be a game changer because we've talked about if you could build these containers. I've seen also some companies that are building containers that we were talking about. You could put them in Walmart parking lots or on the roof of the building, and you could get really fresh, and you just basically take the supply chain out of it. You know, somebody goes up in the morning and picks the lettuce from the parking lot and then walks it into the store for you to buy it. I mean, talk about how great that would be. So that there's a lot of innovation there. And again, the biggest problem that we're having is how to scale that. You know, I need to do that in 5,000 locations, and sometimes 100 degrees, and sometimes it's minus 30, you know, yes, in our locations. So you have to be able to deal with all those problems.
The drone could pick the lettuce and exactly, fly it right to your house.
Exactly.
You've gotten to go, you know, Houston, you travel a lot. You've gotten to go to a lot of cool places and do many cool things. Have you ever had the opportunity to go to SpaceX?
I haven't, actually. I would love to. My daughter is enamored by them, and we want to go watch a launch either in the Cape or down in LA where they've been doing them lately. So no, I definitely do want to visit. Have you been down there yourself?
No. So here's the thing. So it's my birthday today, so I'm very excited.
Hey, happy birthday. All right.
Thank you. I'm 31, and this whole podcast and everything grew over the past year. So it was an amazing year, like unbelievable. So surprised by it. And I was thinking, you know, how could I do this next year better, like bigger? And I'm a huge fan of Elon Musk. And so one of the things we're always talking about is, what excuse could we have to meet Elon Musk?
Exactly.
And we were talking at my birthday dinner this weekend, and I was like looking at the list of upcoming guests, you, CTOs, like GitHub, just Johnson & Johnson, just all these great, huge companies. And I said, you know what? Elon Musk is a nerd. Like, he's geeky like us. I bet he would think that it's cool to meet, like, if I got a group of like 10 or 12 of them.
No, that's cool. Yeah.
Awesome CTOs together. Then we could do like a round table at SpaceX, like tour the facility and make sure that we set it up for a day that Musk is there.
Yeah, there you go. There you go. The Tesla factory is right across the street from us. And I have seen, I don't know if you've ever been in through the tours or any of those things, but
no.
When I went and picked up my first Tesla, I've now got another one, but they show the shop floor and where all the executives sit in the old world. They took over the old NUMMI plant here, which was Toyota's, and I think before that it was Ford. And the interesting part about it is where the executives sit now are laid out completely sort of plainly. There's like 20 desks just sort of sitting out on the shop floor, and they all look identical with a computer screen on it and that sort of thing. And the only one that had any difference was there was a Motor Trend Car of the Year Award trophy sitting on one of the desks. And the guy who was giving the tour said, oh yeah, that's Elon's desk right there, right? You know, he comes in and sits right there. I think they now have corporate offices and things. They don't do that anymore. But when he first came out, it is amazing how he's transformed so many industries, right? It's great.
I'm a huge fan. So if I manage to get that together, that's something you'd be interested in?
I'd definitely be interested, yes.
All right, cool. I don't think there's anybody. I was even wondering, I was like, what if we did this? And then we did somebody, like, did this with another great technologist. And I was like, there's pretty much like three people who I could even think of doing this with. And that would be Musk, Gates, and Bezos.
Yeah,
and so yeah, I just think that it would be the coolest thing. I was like, we'll start with one.
Start there, yeah.
That'll be this year, and we'll see if we can get that together.
Awesome.
So, advice for first-time leaders. It's like a big topic we have on the show. You made the transition. At one point, you were an individual contributor. You became a first-time leader. Yeah. What are some of the lessons, the takeaways from that?
You know, I talk about this a lot when I go back to my alma mater, and I teach an e-commerce MBA class and typically a guest speaker kind of thing. And people always ask me how I got where I was. And, you know, one of the things I push relatively hard, especially on engineers, is you see a lot of engineers wanting to jump to management early in their career. And I really try to push hard back on that, to say, please do not join the management ranks too early. And what I really mean by that is you should build an expertise in something, and some part of the, you should be the technical expert for Node or Python or some system, some supply chain system or whatever. Because at some point in your career, you've got to be the person who you people go to get information, or if you know what I mean, right? And so I drive that home, because I see so many people wanting to jump to management. So that being said, once they jump to management, then you start talking about things like mentoring, and I think you've covered this on a few of your podcasts. I got lucky that I had a really strong mentor early who was really hard on me, but also had my job. But I found later that he was actually using me as much as I was using him, if you know what I mean? And so don't underestimate your experience and your local connection with your team and how important that is to your bosses, if you will, right? And what I mean by that is, how's it going culturally? What are people, quote unquote, complaining about? What are people thinking that's going well? And, you know, what's the sort of overall pulse of the organization? And that, you know, for leaders, as you get more senior, you know, I find myself spending quite a bit of time with my sort of mentees. And most of my mentees are not managers. Some of them are, but I spend a lot of time with the sort of, first, mostly senior engineers to talk about technology that I want to learn, but also folks who I can rely on to give me the honest truth, right? And the manager I know just want to cut to the chase and find out, like, somebody who will tell them what's going on. Don't give me any BS. You know, tell me this is what's really happening. Here's what people think. Here's, you know, because a lot of people are trying to, you know, impress the boss, and they don't want to tell them bad news. I want to hear the bad. And that's the reason I need you to tell me what's going on, right? And so don't underestimate your knowledge there, and make sure you can articulate that well in an elevator speech, or if you're going to have a half hour meeting. So anyway, that's a lot of people, ask me about, you know, what's the do's and do's nots, but I have a few of those, but that's another topic probably.
So what stands out to you with these engineers, what I gathered from that was honest, direct communication. Those things, when you see those happening within these senior engineers, that triggers something that, hey, maybe I'll keep them close, invest some time into them, mentor them.
Yes. A lot of people ask, obviously, you know, I've heard lots of, relatively famous people give almost the same speech as I've seen, saying people will come and ask me to be their mentor. But, you know, number one, I've never really met them. I don't know, what their really goals are in life and that sort of thing. Would I be even a good mentor? I have no idea. And so, typically I coach people not to ask for a mentor relationship until they've built up some other kind of relationship with them, whether it's, again, I'm asking for expertise, or, I see them in meetings, or, talk to them in the hallways, that sort of thing. And you sort of get to know them first before you talk about a mentee relationship. I don't mind having a one-on-one meeting with somebody one or two times, but, a mentor relationship is something that really has to be bi-directional, right? And it's not always a compatibility there.
Yeah, I like this question too, because I've never asked someone to be a mentor. Maybe in my head I thought about it, but then I figured that, what would they say to me on this topic? And then I realized, okay, well, I just need to go learn more about the topic. So I have a specific question to ask them that's not going to be frustratingly 101, right? And then I figured, oh, there doesn't need to be this official pairing relationship to like ask. All I have to do is come up with a good enough question, go get beat up enough, get some experience. And then when I have some legitimate struggle or inquiry, just go to them and say, hey, this is what I'm experiencing. This is what I've done. What is your insight? And then everyone's a mentor because they respect the question, because they understand your level of competence in the topic.
100%. I agree. Yeah. I love that. As a matter of fact, you're right. And frankly, most leaders want to spend time on that anyway, right? On those kind of pieces. We have, I always tease my poor finance partner that, the least favorite time I have in my job as CTO is spending time in budget meetings, right? I would rather spend time on mentoring people and talking about a new technology stack or whatever than doing that. And so when you get compelled, when somebody approaches you with some great question like that, you want to dive in, right? So yeah, you're 100% correct. Find a topic, especially if you know a person's interested in it, then you could do well at researching that topic, right? Not to schmooze right. the boss or whatever, but you know what I mean.
No, you're doing it to advance and grow yourself. And
absolutely.
By necessity, you need the expert's input. And so when you raise yourself to that level, that, you know, it's just amazing. It's that feeling of growth. Now, do you have a favorite metric that you find particularly useful to track?
You know, I track two main things, and I always tell people there's really two things that that a CTO is measured by when you get down to it. I mean, my CEO and what the company is relying on is to make sure that my systems are up all the time. You know, so what's my system availability is number one priority for the company. So nobody wants to deal with a set of unstable systems that crash all the time or have bugs and that sort of thing. So you can add quality in there, but I really think about it. System availability is number one. Number two, I got, you know, this job because people want me to deliver projects and you know, capabilities for the customer, you know, as fast as possible, right? You know, so, you know, having the reputation and a really high bar for delivery is the second metric. And a lot of people use different mechanisms. In the old days, you were talking about sort of on-time delivery of projects and that sort of thing. In the new sort of product world, the last 5 or 10 years, really talking about time to value. So, hey, I have a new set of capabilities I want to deliver for my customer. It includes, you know, I want to take my returns experience, my in-store returns experience, from 5 minutes to 30 seconds. You know, so, or, and it turns out we really want it to be 5 seconds. So I want to see real progress when we can make, okay, it was 5 minutes, now it's 3 minutes, now it's 30 seconds. And so we've developed features that allow people to pre, you know, when I'm going to return an item to the store, you know, I can work on my phone or on my computer at home and say, hey, I really want to return this item. And so we give you a little QR code. You you walk into the store and we have this fast returns line, and you just go up to the kiosk and scan your code, and you just hand the item back and you're done. You're out of there, right? So it took a 5 minute experience down to a 5 second experience. And these are the kind of things that you want to be. Yes, exactly. So
you hand clap for that.
What a surprise. Customers love it, right? You know, you always hate when you have to go to the store and return something, right? If we can make that an easy experience, it's great. So so that's really the second one, time to value, how to deliver. The third one that I've added, and I talk about this with other CTOs, is the other thing I get all the time is transparency. And what I mean by that is, you know, I can't tell you the number of times people have said, hey, you must have 5 people in your organization that can go work on XYZ project, you know? And typically I can carve out, you know, 1 or 2 of those a quarter to go work on, but I really don't have 5 people available. I've got my teams running super hard on lots of experiences and new capabilities for the customer in the supply chain and merchandising. And, but the way I'm able to articulate that is I use all the latest tools, Jira and GitHub and all the modern tools that allow me to show the organization, here's how much I'm spending on each one of these capabilities. So when somebody comes to me and says, hey, you know, how much were you spending on supply chain? I can just go click and here we go. I can show them. And that level of transparency gives the organization trust that I'm not squandering money, or I've got side projects, or, you know, I've got projects that I'm not telling about, you know, and I'm really transparent about when a project isn't going well. I'm really transparent about that it's not going well. We are having some technical difficulties, or we underestimated, or that sort of thing. And being open and transparent, you know, gives you a lot of freedom to take risks in the organization as well.
Well, it's because you build your level of trust, right? Just as you were saying earlier, you want, what stands out to you is people being honest, direct, and communicating, right? Let me know what the problems are. The same is true with your peers and your stakeholders. If you're Absolutely. Transparent to them, now you get the CEO and the CFO, you get 3 brilliant people that yeah. are involved in the problem that you're facing. And it's like, let's just tackle this as a team. But if you hold that back,
yeah,
and that's how you get in trouble.
I always give people a hard time when they say, you know, their philosophy is under promise and over deliver. I've never believed in that. I've always been, you know, we are going to push this thing to the edge. If I can get this shipped a month earlier, we're going to push get it shipped a month earlier. It might be a day late or 4 or 5 days late, but I push the team. I mean, if somebody else would have sandbagged the date and said, hey, it's going to take us an extra 30 days. And then, hey, they just, you know, they just squandered 28 days because they could have got it done sooner, but they were too, you know, they were too chicken essentially to say they could get it done a month earlier. And they might not have made that month, but they made it a month and 2 days earlier, or you know, 28 days earlier. And as a result, you know, I don't want to get dinged by that, you know, saying that I actually pushed the team really hard and we got it out there. So the under promise over deliver, I just have never been a believer in. I think if you give the team a goal and they know what they're trying to deliver, they're going to go as hard as they can.
Well, yeah, because you have your culture right. You've got the right people in the positions.
Yeah. People really want to deliver great stuff in the end, right? When you get the right teams in place, you know, people have a passion for it and they really will deliver.
Yeah, I wake up every day. I'm like, what else is there to do but just work hard and change the world?
Exactly.
I'm just excited. What trend is the biggest on your radar that you think, you know, might have the largest impact on your team or organization? There's a lot of trends out there, but what trend is coming up the most?
Well, I've talked about machine learning a lot, and I do think the thing that has changed Walmart Labs in the last 2 years is really the ability to get access to really great not only compute resources and data, but also access to, you know, pretty standard machine learning algorithms that will make a pretty big change in the world into their particular program. And it's really the simplification of programming, maybe in general, but I think in particular access to the machine learning world. And so what we've really spent the last year on is how do I make sure I'm collecting the right data that is accurate and it's in a place that's easily accessible. And so, because what you really see is the second you start doing some work on machine learning, you start running into data problems. I don't have the way to capture the data in real time. And so as we've moved away from sort of the traditional batch processing systems, we've moved all of our systems to event streams and effectively getting everything into real time. And that is, that's probably the biggest change we made in the last 2 years. As we go forward, I think, I think computer vision is going to be applied in so many places. You know, a lot of people talk about the, you know, sort of checkout list retail stores, but I think you can use it in dozens of other places, including not only self-driving cars and that sort of thing that Elon and those guys are working on, but think about your supply chain, like where trucks are in the warehouse, where a particular box is, how much inventory do you have? We've got obviously our shelf scanning robots that help us look for out of stocks and that sort of thing. But you can look at traffic patterns, you can look at security, physical security products, and just making the entire supply chain and merchandising processes easier. So I think that's a big one.
And there's so many wins at every single stage. Like you mentioned, finding where the box is in the warehouse, right?
Yeah.
Which the sensors on the truck, you know, is it going to break down and get rerouted?
Exactly.
Like, and then all the way down to where does the physical product live on the shelf? Like if you have a robot move products around and find the most optimal position for their sales, that's kind of like a unique idea, right?
Yeah. It was funny. I was talking to some other CTOs about computer vision in particular, and they were talking about, you know, retrofitting some of these warehouses think about a factory and how many devices are in a factory that would have to be retrofitted to have a modern IoT device. And instead what they did is they put up a video camera that just looks at the unit. You know, it can actually, you know, spot the red light going on or the gauge, and they can use, you know, basic computer vision to understand temperature and, you know, what is the gauge reading. You know, you can put a, you know, a $10 camera up and connect that up instead of retrofitting the entire warehouse or the manufacturing plant. So those even basic capabilities like that are going to transform more businesses than we think.
I love that. I want to be a part of that meeting where they're all discussing how to retrofit more effectively and someone just walks in and is just like, hey, put up a camera. And then
exactly.
I love those aha moments. So real quick, as we start to wrap up, what does your average day look like?
Oh boy. When I'm not on a plane, I'm an early bird. So I usually come in the office around 7-ish a.m., maybe sometimes a little earlier, like today, and get, sort of ready for the work day. So take care of all my emails and mess, anything I need to do, but also prep out what's going on for the day and do all my pre-reads and everything I need for the day. The days are filled like most folks in my management role. I'm filled with meetings and strategy. We have what we essentially call QBRs, or quarterly business reviews, where I meet with each one of my engineering teams and our product partners, and we go through the sort of strategy and the roadmap of each of the programs, and typically see where there's hot spots, or we're not hiring fast enough in this area, and this is a critical point. So I spend quite a bit of time on that. That's just the fun part of my day. Those are the meetings I can add the most value in and do it. And then, boy, lately it's been things like space planning, like where are we going to put all these 2,000 people, right? We need new buildings, and how fast can we grow in Washington, D.C.? How many people can get in Carlsbad in California? So we've been doing a lot of planning this time of year. So and then I wrap it up, usually around 6 p.m.-ish. And then emails the rest of the day, right? So
I'm an early person too.
Yeah, it's important. I think most engineers aren't. And so I've found not only does it help my commute, but it also gives me 2 hours of sort of free time in the morning that I can sort of get ready for. And you hear people like Gates and a few others talk about, thinking time. And, my brain is working the best in the morning. And so I'm doing all my early strategy work and that sort of thing first thing in the morning.
So I started reading these books and listening to some of the sort of life motivational personal development. And what I noticed is as I went from speaker to speaker to speaker, they had this common thread of getting up early. And so there's this one saying, win the morning, win the day. Mm. And so I decided, all right, well, I have these like two or three slack hours at the end of the day. Just put them up front, front load them so that I have quiet personal time when I'm the most fresh, and then I go into the day. And I did that just for like a trial for a week. And I think it's been seven months now. Oh my God. I'm up at 5 a.m. I go for a run or a walk outside. I see the stars. I think I get my mind clear. I focus on myself and what I want to accomplish and what the thoughts are I have. If I'm writing a book at the time, I'll do some writing on my walk or something. And then I have my breakfast and I get into the office around 7:30 and get some work done, all the emails and prep for everything. And then by the time my team gets in at 9 a.m., I'm like, my day's halfway over.
Absolutely. I it's funny that you say that, because oftentimes, because we're a global company, I'll spend either sometime in the morning or in the evening talking to our team in India, and then Arkansas is 2 hours ahead. So in my California time, so often I'm, I've already had 3 or 4 meetings by the time anybody's showed at the door. And I'm like, hey, welcome to the day, guys. My day's over, right? But no, it is good. I think it's helped a lot as being a leader. And I know people do it differently. I spend a lot of time listening to podcasts and audiobooks as well on the way to work. I have everybody in California has a long commute. So I spend a lot of time, and if I'm not on the phone with India, either in the morning or the evening, I spend a lot of time and on audiobooks and that sort of thing too. So
me too. I'm a huge fan of Audible.
Yeah.
Like I get all the books all the time.
You got to use Walmart, Kobo. We did a relationship with Kobo last year. So Walmart eBooks is what I use.
Oh, well, shout out for Walmart eBooks. No, I didn't know that existed. So thank you.
Yeah. No, I just read a great book called Daring Greatly. If you're into the self-reflection, it's really good about how people not only think about themselves, but how they can portray themselves externally to other folks, and how to not shame people. I guess it's a great book, actually, really good.
So into self-reflection, we have a tool here at the company called ReflectDB.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Wow, that's awesome.
We make entries into the ReflectDB.
Oh, yeah.
Because we didn't want to call it like a diary or a journal or anything. So we're like, hey, what do we call it? And then one day I'm thinking, like, let's call it ReflectDB. Let's see if that's the actual product that exists. And I was like, nope, it doesn't exist. Let's call it that.
Yep.
Yeah. That's fantastic. Jeremy, amazing call. You've brought so much, like a whole new level of value to the audience. I can't thank you enough, my friend.
Hey, I appreciate it. It was really nice talking to you, Joel. I've listened to a few of your podcasts, and I'll keep it up. So it's a great event. And yeah, get out to the CTO forum sometime. It'll be excellent.
Absolutely. If you ever need anything from me, connection to a past guest on the show, anything at all, you just reach out, we'll hook you up. And then if I get Musk to agree to that,
I'm in.
You're in. Okay. Well, thank you so much. You enjoy your day, Jeremy. And just thank you again.
No problem. Nice meeting you. Take care.
Talk soon.
All right. Bye.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening. If you'd like to help, please take a moment right now to open up the iTunes app and leave a review of the podcast. If you take a screenshot of the review and text it or email it to a friend who needs to listen to the podcast and then CC me, joel@moderncto.io. If you CC me on the email, I'll send you a copy of the Modern CTO book or give you a shout out on the podcast, whichever you prefer. We're trying to get listed on the top 100 for iTunes, and I need your help in order to do this.